Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Surreal Gerald Quinn on this Sunday, September 20th, 2015, as we discuss the world of sports. Of course, I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn, taking you for the next hour. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me at Twitter. At William Gerald, on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to Instagram, follow me on Instagram at Rillo Gerald Quinn. For all reviews and comments of this show, go to Apple, iTunes.apple.com, and look up 1211 Sports Talk featuring Surreal Gerald Quinn. Certainly, your comments and opinions will be definitely appreciated. Begin with the college football. It's just shaping up to be one of those seasons, college football, where you don't know what's going to happen, because I don't know who's the team to beat. No, again, only through 3 weeks, but I just can't put your finger on what's going on right now in college football. What I do know is that you have a number of big time teams who still, even after week three of the season, have major quarterback issues. I do know that. And I mean powerhouses. I'm talking about teams with championship aspirations. Ohio State, Alabama, Notre Dame, to a lesser extent, even Florida State. Last night, of course, you had two of college football's pillars losing at home in Alabama and USC. I'm going to take the Alabama one first. I'm going to tell you right now, to me, I look at that game, I saw an Alabama team that didn't look so much overmatched, but I was not surprised by what happened last night in Tuscaloosa, because Mississippi is loaded, and I mean loaded with talent. Like Mississippi, I haven't looked at the 2016 draft list, as you know, everybody, that's basically a year round process. I haven't looked at that yet, but I would have to think that Mississippi has just as many draft prospects as Alabama, because you look at the eye test. They look in terms of speed, physicality, athleticism, there's every bit is not good, it's not better than Alabama. And that game, like everybody talks about the demise of Alabama, the dynasty's over. It's not even about Alabama. I mean, Alabama still gets top two, top five, top two, top three recruiting classes. They have talent in year in, year out. It's not even about Alabama. It's about what everybody around them is doing, the rest of the SEC. It's about the rest of the conference. Like these other teams have just gotten better. Especially in the SEC West, they're better. They're just better. And instead of knocking Alabama again, and I got a couple of shots I can take at Alabama. First of all, you don't bench your quarterback after two wins, okay? Especially after one of the wins was against a nationally ranked team, a quality team like Wisconsin. That's just stupid. So Saban messed up. Clearly overthought himself with that decision. It was a bad decision, but that game was not about Alabama. That game was about Mississippi, to me, and how talented they are, that team is. You know, beat Alabama last year, beat them this year, first time since Notre Dame team in 74, that team, 73, 74, that team that has beat Alabama back-to-back years when Alabama has been ranked in the AP top three. So whatever recruiting, I mean, Mississippi, like, we saw this coming like 2 or 3 years ago when Mississippi started getting all these recruits, these top five recruits. And that class has paid off in a major way in 2015, 2014, beginning last year, and it's fully paying off this year. Mississippi easily could be in that Final Four playoff situation. It's still early, still got a lot of games to be played. The SEC West, we know it's a gauntlet. But don't get it mistaken. That game was not about Alabama. Again, Alabama was sloppy, five turnovers. But you had a team in Mississippi that is just loaded. And I mean loaded with talent. Again, last night, I mean yesterday was, you had a couple teams, that really impressed, Notre Dame, impressive in their victory, despite the fact that they keep just losing players. And Notre Dame really should really control his own destiny as far as making the playoffs, because the schedule is not hard. I mean, their schedule, they have USC at home. They play, Pittsburgh. They don't have a tough schedule. Let me put you that way. It is not a gauntlet. They will have an excellent chance at making the playoffs. They have even without the quarterback or the running back. So Notre Dame, that was a big win for them. Game was not as close as the score indicated. Bad loss for USC. USC, every year I hear like USC's back. A couple of years ago USC was ranked in the top, was ranked second. Maybe they might have been preseason number one a couple of years ago. USC has some nice skill players. And some guys that will get drafted. But, every time when a big game comes, they get punched in the mouth. And now, again, we know Stanford was not as bad as their performance against Northwestern. Like, they were not, like, sick. That was one of those classic week one on the road, not taking a team series. It turns out Northwestern might be a little better than, it was a little better than what we realized they were going to be. That was one of those. They came into the Coliseum and basically kicked USC in the mouth. I mean, they like, Kevin Hogan is looking like a first round draft pick. They're throwing the ball all over against USC. That was an embarrassing performance by USC last night at home, prime time, against a rival, conference rival. That was just it was a horrible performance by USC. It's horrible. So you see again two of the college football pillars losing at home, first time since 2013 that Alabama's lost the home game. Of course, 2013 that was the Johnny Manziel game when he came in there and lit them up. Maybe 2012. Because James Winston won the Heisman Trophy that year. He lit him up in his Heisman Trophy season, which is 2012. So it's been 3 years since Alabama lost a home game. But again, it's not about Alabama. It's about the rise and the power of the mighty SEC. Just getting started here on this latest edition of 12 on Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. A lot to do. Pro football picks. We'll talk Redskins, Rams. That and much, much more in this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. We'll be right back.
With me. Cosby coming at you with music and fun. And if you're not careful, you may learn something before it's done.
Hey, 7215-6180 is your call number in this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. Speaking of embarrassing performances from the college football day yesterday, how about Ohio State? You know, and I can't say that I saw this coming. It's Northern Illinois, so I would have given you 25 points. And if you could give me 30 points, and I would have took the points as far as that goes against Northern Illinois. First week of the season, okay, after they beat Virginia Tech, everybody was basically going gonzo Ohio State. They're unbeatable. They have too much talent. They have embarrassment of riches and on and on and on and on. That game, you know, don't let that game fool you. And it did fool a lot of people because – before Virginia Tech's quarterback got hurt, they were winning that game. That game was a competitive game before the Virginia Tech's quarterback went down. Okay, they go to Hawaii, you know, go through the motions at Hawaii, end up winning like 38-0. But again, go through the motions. Again, there's something amiss with Ohio State right now. They bench Cardell Jones, put in JT Barrett. He does next to nothing. We know there's talks about because the offensive coordinator is missing. It's just something that's not right with Ohio State right now from an offensive standpoint. Defense is fine. But offensively, they're just like – and I said it after the Virginia Tech game. I thought that they were doing too much trickery and there was too much – like you have the best players. Allow them to go out there and just make plays. And like they – without even knowing – the intricacies of their offense, and they need to simplify the attack. Great offensive line, great running back, good receivers. Again, you don't have to complicate things. And I thought they made that mistake in week one against Virginia Tech. Again, it didn't come up to bite them because Virginia Tech just didn't have enough weapons to make them pay for it, especially with the quarterback going down. But yeah, Ohio State right now, I have to be a little concerned, not worried, but a little concerned about Ohio State. That quarterback situation, who knows, you know, like who knows what's going to become of that. Again, I think that when you are a defending champion going against a team that you are clearly better than, taking the quarterback, starting quarterback out is a bit of a stretch. But, hey, you know, I think Urban might have felt like he would have lost that game if he would have kept Cardell Jones in there. Again, they could have easily lost that game. Northern Illinois just didn't have any offense. And it has no offense. Ohio State had 5 turnovers. They were asking Northern Illinois to win that game. So you want to talk about teams that in college football that look shaky. Throughout the first couple of weeks, everybody's talking about Auburn. They got exposed by LSU. This Fournette is a legit Heisman Trophy candidate. He's I think the best running back in college football right now. He had a big day. But Ohio State better get his stuff together. Now, the good news for Ohio State is, maybe it's not good, it can be good and bad, is that the conference is so weak, other than Michigan State. You're looking at their schedule. They're not going to get challenged. Now, the Michigan game always will be very tricky at the end of the year. Harbaugh had almost a full season with his team. Michigan, ever since their opening loss, has played better. Won yesterday going away, so they're 2-1 now. But Ohio State might have trouble just getting up for these teams. I actually think that Ohio State would be better off if they were playing in a stronger conference against top-notch competition week in and week out to keep their focus. I think playing against these teams, Hawaii and Northern Illinois, I think in some ways they're also playing down to the competition. again, this college football season has been very strange. I mean, very strange with some of these scores. You know, you're thinking that teams should destroy another team, and like I guarantee you that more teams, more favored underdogs, are covering the spread than through the course of the first 3 weeks than there have been over the course of the last 3 or 4 years in college football. Because these teams, even the teams that even look at Michigan State Air Force, I mean, Air Force covers the spread at Michigan State. Like, it doesn't even matter if it's home or away. The underdogs are covering against these big favorites who are not just, you know, top 10, top 15. These are top five teams with national championship aspirations. But Ohio State was awful yesterday. That was a sloppy game. You kept waiting for them to pull away, and it never happened. Never happened. Sunday morning headlines. Dez Bryant is going to be out 10 to 12 weeks with the bone graft. I didn't, you know, initially when the report came out last week, they said 4 to 6 weeks. Now that number has jumped by a month and gone, well, at least about a month and a half, and going to 10 to 12 weeks. Listen, we know how important he is to that offense. We know how great a player he is. But when you have a quarterback, a Pro Bowl franchise caliber quarterback, it doesn't. It will not matter as much. You have a top 10 quarterback, and you have a great offensive line. They will not miss Dez Bryant as much as everybody is making it out to be. One of those receivers will emerge. Terrence Williams, Cole Beasley, more touches for Jason Witten, more touches for Joseph Randall out the backfield. You can replace a receiver. I mean, you can. That's all there is to it. If you have a top quarterback and a great offensive line, you can replace the receiver. So, to me, this is not as big a deal as everybody's making it out to be. Kobe Bryant is going to have his minutes capped, according to Byron Scott. Of course, last season we know Byron Scott ran Kobe Bryant into the ground, just playing a ridiculous amount of minutes, playing nearly 35 minutes a game. Was playing 40 minutes, had a few games where he's played over 40 minutes. Byron Scott came out and said, hey, it's not going to happen this year. He's going to have a minutes cap. I mean, I would guess anywhere probably from 25 to 30 minutes, somewhere in that range, no back-to-backs, you know, kind of like that Dwayne Wade schedule 2.0, basically. For Kobe Bryant. Of course, last year he only played 35 games before he went out with the shoulder injury. He has resumed basketball activities. He's cleared to practice. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, it's one thing to say it in September, but November comes around. You're playing the Clippers, close game in the fourth quarter. I want to see Kobe Bryant. I want to see him on the bench. So, again, it sounds great in September. Different story come November, December, as the season progresses. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk Redskins, Rams, and much, much more in this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. We'll be right back. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Surreal Gerald Quinn. The Redskins take on the St. Louis Rams at home tonight. Today, excuse me, will be amongst the opening kickoffs, 1 o'clock or 1:05 or so. You start off a season 0-2 at home. It's pretty much a wrap. I mean that there are, you know, that 0-1 is one thing. First of all, the 0-2 hole is a kiss of death anyway for most teams. Like, the numbers are what they are in terms of teams starting off 0-2. Teams starting off 0-2 again at home, I would venture to say, would love to see how many teams have made the playoffs starting off the season 0-2 at home. Mitchell said it is a small, very small number. Last week, I thought the Redskins played well enough to win, certainly defensively. And offensively, you look, they moved the ball up and down the field, controlled the clock, ran the football, had one bad turnover. The one bad turnover with the interception. Cousins was okay, not great, not bad. But, again, conservative play calling and just sloppy play as far as penalties did them in against Miami. And, of course, the usual special teams disaster that has become the Washington Redskins over the last, basically decade or so in terms of particularly the last 5 years. Their special teams have been amongst the worst in the NFL. It has been horrible. And that was the difference in the game last week with the punt return for a touchdown. But, again, what you want to, you want to go look at glass half full. Defense played extremely well. I mean, you give up 10 points in today's NFL in 2015. You got to win the football game. I know people want to criticize the defense saying that they couldn't stop on their last drive. Listen, they gave up 10 points. Okay, 10. Yeah, I mean, they're not the Ravens of 2000. They're not going to be throwing tossing shutouts here. You got to give your offense at least, in today's NFL, I say you got to give your offense at least 20 points. You got to give your defense at least 20 points in today's NFL. I mean, really, it used to be 17 points, but with the way teams could throw the ball around, the way today's NFL is, I'd say 20. Yeah, I say you got to give your team, you got to give your defense at least 20 points to have a reasonable chance to win the game. Of course, they face the Rams. The Rams have always, especially in the last couple of years, have had the Redskins' number. Even on those rare years where the Redskins have been decent to good, of course, these two franchises will always be linked because of one, Robert Griffin III, the trade in 2012, all the draft picks that the Rams accumulated through that trade, which has helped build that team, in particular that great defense they have, which is one of the best defenses in the league, best defensive line in the league, 5 first-round draft picks. Here's what I'll say about that. Clearly, St. Louis won that trade. It's not even a question. But when you think of it big picture-wise, and when you think of what has come out of that trade in terms of results, their results haven't been really that much better than the Redskins. I mean, like 2012, the Redskins made the playoffs. St. Louis hasn't had one playoff appearance since that trade. Matter of fact, St. Louis hasn't made the playoffs since 2004. I mean, that's going back to, like, Mark Bolger and, that might have been Marshall Faulks last year. I believe that was Marshall Faulks last year with the Rams. Yeah. Steven Jackson was emerging as a good player. Let's calm down about how this is just one of the great fleeced of all time. Like, let's hold the brakes. The Rams haven't done anything. The Rams have, like, the last 2-3 years, the Rams have been that team that's been the almost team. And I call them the almost team because playoff potential, but just don't quite get there. Or something happens, Bradford gets hurt. They lose a couple bad home games and they fall short, but finish the season strong. That's what they've been. Got off to these slow starts, but slow starts and hot finishes, and then they remind you, hey, they could have been a playoff team. No, they were not a playoff team because they were 1-4 at one point. But again, the Rams have a great defensive line. I do think that the Redskins will be able to throw the ball on them. I'm not sure they're going to be able to run the ball successfully on them like they did like they did against Miami. Of course, you know, I expect Kirk Cousins to be under siege with that defensive line. They can get to the quarterback. Robert Quinn, Aaron Donald, those guys can get to the quarterback. Long, those guys can get to the quarterback at will, seemingly. They had 6 sacks against Seattle. Again, certainly a winnable game. A winnable game for the Redskins. The Ram offense, again, Ram offense is solid, not great. They don't have a great offense. I know Nick Foles had a big day last week against Seattle. I expect this to be... I think this game will be played in the 20s. Again, the Redskins have to win this game. Literally the season will be over. Their season will be over if they don't win this game as far as any, you know, playoff or divisional aspirations they have. You can't be 0-2 at home. You can't fall to 0-2 at home to start off the season. Because then you're looking at, you have the Giant game coming up on Thursday night, short 3 days rest for that, traveling. Then you'll be back. Then you'll be well rested, but home to Philadelphia. Who knows what shape they'll be in coming into that week 3, week 4. But again, I think the way to beat the Rams the Redskins are going to have to throw the ball, run the ball to try to neutralize that pass rush. But you can move the ball against the Rams. As good as their defense is as far as getting to the quarterback and physicality, they are susceptible to big plays. Very much so. So, very interested to see what the Redskins approach will be, especially without DeSean Jackson. I'm guessing you'll see a lot of Alfred Morris, a lot of heavy Alfred Morris, Matt Jones, Jordan Reed. I would like to see the Redskins take more shots down the field and be a little bit more aggressive in terms of their play calling. Like, see a little bit more aggression, because I just don't believe that you can do the three yards in a cloud of dust and be successful in today's NFL. I don't think it's possible. I think two teams are too fast and too athletic on defense to play it close to the vest. So we'll see what happens. Again, don't want to start off 0-2 at home. That's what the Redskins are looking to avoid as we enter a week 2 of NFL action. Certainly we'll have NFL picks and talk about some prime games, some big-time matchups. Great weekend of great Sunday of NFL football. A number of matchups. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this next edition of 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joel Quinn. We'll be right back. Call to call number in this latest edition of 12-11 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joel Quinn. ESPN was shooting live, was live on location from Buffalo, really promoting this Buffalo-New England game. Rex Ryan, of course, you know, his rivalry, if you want to call it that, with New England. Well, I mean, right, listen, Rex did win a couple of games with New England. Right, he did win a playoff game at New England. So, I mean, you know, he'll never be mistaken for Bill Belichick or for Mike Tomlin. But, you know, Rex has had some moments against the Bills, certainly the Patriots, certainly doesn't have any fear of them. His famous quote, you know, we're not kissing the rings. But, you know, they're showing all these Hall of Famers that the Bills have, you know, Jim Kelly, Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, Bruce Smith, Bill Polian. You know, that's a lot of Hall of Famers to have with no Super Bowls. That's a lot. You think of a team with so many Hall of Famers in the same era, the same team, but they have no Super Bowls to show for it. That, you know, I know it's a low blow, but I mean, you keep showing all these Hall of Famers. I'm like, man, they must have been a dominant team, and they did dominate the AFC. You know, things would go well until that last game of the season. I'm sorry, Buffalo. I could not help myself. But those teams, and, you know, all jokes aside, look, those teams were fun to watch. K-Gun offense, you know, Bruce Smith was outside of Reggie White, Bruce Smith, you can make a case for the most dominant defensive force of that era. This side of Reggie White, certainly one of the all-time greats. They could not get over the hump and just ran again. They were, you know, born in the wrong era. They played in the wrong era. Don't think about it. Those teams that played in this era, they would be multiple Super Bowls. I mean, those teams would have won two or three Super Bowls in this era, I believe. But, you know, come along in the era with the, you know, Cowboys and 49ers and, you know, the Redskins, when the Redskins were good, that's how long it was ago that the Washington Redskins were in the conversation amongst the NFL's elite. 347-215-6180, it's your call number. Richard Sherman, who is, of course, no stranger to controversy or speaking his mind, came out with a statement earlier this week speaking about black-on-black crime and feeling like it's being, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement should somewhat take a back seat to the black-on-black crime movement. I thought they were really all in one and the same, to be honest with you, because, you know, when another black person kills another black person, to me, their lives still matter. From that standpoint, I thought it was one and the same. But basically, you know, Summers basically want to say that, hey, when black on black crime is taking place, I don't remember anybody talking about Black Lives Matter. He's referring to a specific incident that took place in his that took place where somebody close to him was murdered, and now he's was murdered. And by a 35-year-old man, he mentions that, you know, police weren't involved, but nobody talked about it in terms of it being a black, you know, there was no movement as far as Black Lives Matter and things of that nature. First of all, listen, everybody has a right to their opinion, but he's dead wrong. Black-on-black crime has been talked about in the communities in hip-hop for years. I mean, you can go back to Marvin Gaye and the Temptations. I mean, you really listen to the music. I mean, like, I was going to mention the reference of the song, that the famous hip-hop song, Self-Destruction, with KRS-One, came out like in 88, 89. But I mean, yeah. This stuff was being talked about a long time ago. I mean, before I was born, about black on black crime in the community. I don't know the people that Richard Sherman is listening to. I don't know if he listens to rap. I don't know if he watches Tavis Smiley. I don't know where he's getting his information from, or his sources of information. But not listening to the same. He's not listening to the same stuff that I'm listening to. I'll tell you that. I mean, or going to the same, or definitely doesn't go to the church I go to. I mean, we talk about black on black crime all the time. It's not like it repeatedly. And you know, so again, I somewhat get his point. I somewhat get what he was trying to say. I just don't think he went about it in the wrong way of saying it. Like, if you want to say that, hey, we need to, as African Americans need to focus on trying to eliminate, doing our best to eliminate black on black crime, sure. Absolutely. I would agree with him 10,000%. But don't say that it's not being talked about. Or not enough of a focus on it. I mean, those statements. I mean, that statement couldn't be. I mean, he's dead wrong about that. Just because it's not a movement that says end. Just because they're not printing out T-shirts that saying end black on black crime doesn't mean people aren't talking about it. Okay. And I frankly think Richard Sherman is becoming, he's trying to become like that. He's becoming that dude, maybe a knockoff Charles Barkley, in the fact that he wants to say things that are so-called profound and controversial at the same time. He's really becoming that, trying to become that. Maybe this is part of him marketing himself, his brand, draw attention to himself, but he's got a little Charles Barkley in him. Now, he's 10 times smarter than Charles Barkley will ever be. Let me say that, okay? But he's trying, you know, saying these semi-controversial, half-intelligent statements, it reminds me of somebody who used to play in the NBA, who was a great rebounder, played for the Sixers and Suns and Rockets. Just a little bit of that guy. But, again, wait, just 10 times more and 10 times smarter than Barkley will ever be. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of 1211 of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn. When we return, NFL picks and much, much more on this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk. We'll be right back. Guaranteed. Four games this week, 2-1 last week. Could have been 3-0, but you know what? Was it for Mr. McManus out of Denver, I would have been 3-0. But we'll take 2-1 to start the season. Four games this week. We begin in Buffalo, New York, Orchard Park, Ralph Wilson Stadium, Patriots, Bills. Bills come in as the slightest, and I mean slightest, of favorites at 1. Basically, is a like even a pick'em, and like that's basically a pick'em game. The New England Patriots have absolutely owned the Buffalo Bills in the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick era. The numbers are just off the charts. One as one sided of a rivalry or one side of a matchup that we've seen over the past 10 years. But these Buffalo Bills are supposed to be the new Buffalo Bills. Nasty, physical, knock your block off, run the ball, great, good special teams. But the more things change, the more they stay the same. They don't have a quarterback. I'm not sold on Tyrod Taylor as being that dude. He's not Jim Kelly. Jim Kelly's not walking through that door. I will take the Patriots to win a very close game, 21-17, 2017. I don't trust the fact that Buffalo all of a sudden has solved and figured out the Belichick Brady mystery. I just don't see it. Patriots are good, are great in these matchups, these statement games where their supremacy is being threatened by another team, in particular in that division. Now, it doesn't mean that Buffalo won't knock the Patriots around. They will. Brady's going to get hit. This game is going to be ugly. It's going to be physical. But at the end of the day, I have to go with old, reliable. As much as I would love to pick against the Patriots, I do have a brain. You're rooting like hell against them, Buffalo, but I'll take the Patriots outright to win. Game number two stood out like, I mean, just the game was talking to me. Pick me, pick me, pick me. Tampa Bay, New Orleans, 10 points. Really, really, 10 points? I understand Tampa Bay is coming off an embarrassing loss against the Titans at home. I understand Jameis Winston was terrible. I understand New Orleans is at home. But 10 points, it is the NFL. They are professionals too. That's way too many points for a New Orleans team why should we be completely sold on the New Orleans Saints right now? Why? Tampa Bay has weapons. Vince Jackson. Okay, Mike Evans. Jameis Winston has a game under his belt. Doug Martin. They have weapons that can hurt the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Last year they came into New Orleans and took out the Saints. It was not like they haven't won there before. I'll take New Orleans to win the game, but I'm definitely taking Tampa Bay to cover. I expect this game to be competitive. I think it's going to be a shootout, to be honest with you. Looking at 28-24, 31-27, that type of game. 10 points. The New Orleans Saints, you got to be kidding me. Take Tampa Bay with the points. New Orleans to win the game, but please, 10 points is just, that's an insane number for a team that didn't make the playoffs last year. Game number three, San Francisco at Pittsburgh. West Coast team flying. There are two things right going against the 49ers. Three things. They're playing a team that's desperate coming off a loss, number one. A well-rested Pittsburgh team that hasn't played since the previous Thursday. So they've had extra. That's basically like a semi-bye week. The second thing is that West Coast team flying across country for, in essence, it's a 10 a.m. start. 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern Conference, Eastern time. And the third thing is the Pittsburgh Steelers, understand that the San Francisco 49ers are coming off a Monday night game, short week. So when you add all that up, take and the 6.5-point line, take Pittsburgh with the points, even though I was very impressed with what I saw out of San Francisco on Monday night. But again, Teddy Bridgewater is not Adrian Peterson. Teddy Bridgewater is not Ben Roethlisberger. Antonio Brown, I think Antonio Brown will have a field day against that San Francisco secondary, which I don't think is very good. I'll take Pittsburgh 24-13, that type of game. I think Pittsburgh gets back to his winning ways at home, coming off a loss. Again, San Francisco flying across the country. These West Coast teams that do not have good records, even Seattle, don't have good records when they have to go cross country and have to have an early start. So, I'll take Pittsburgh to win with the points. Game number four, Monday night, Indianapolis hosting the New York Jets. 7 points. I understand Indianapolis is coming off a loss. I understand that the Jets were not that impressive in their home victory. Their home victory over the Cleveland Browns, who frankly don't have a quarterback. But Indianapolis, the Jets match up with Indianapolis because they are physical at the point of attack. teams that are physical at the point of attack are going to give the Colts fits. The New York Jets have a great defensive line. They can get to the quarterback. They can stop the run, put all the pressure on Andrew Luck, and now they have a shutdown corner who can take away T.Y. Hilton in Darrell Revis. You add all those things up. I like the Jets to cover. I think this game will be a very close game, a field goal type game. I like the Indianapolis to win, but look for the Jets to cover. So I'll take New England to win outright. I'll take Tampa Bay to cover. I'll take Pittsburgh to win and cover. And I will take the Jets to cover. Four picks for a week number two. 12-11 Sports Talk features Cyril Gerald Quinn. We'll be right back. Again, very good weekend, excellent weekend for excellent Sunday of football. Some great matchups. I like the San Diego Cincinnati game. Should be a very good game. Of course, Chargers a couple years ago knocked Cincinnati out of the playoffs a couple years ago in Cincinnati, which was contributed to a string of just disappointing playoff failures for the Cincinnati Bengals. That should be a very good game. I was impressed by the Chargers last week. I mentioned, of course, San Francisco and Pittsburgh. Very interesting to see, what San Francisco is all about. San Francisco is all about coming off a nice Monday night victory over the Minnesota Vikings, who for some reason forgot that Adrian Peterson was on the team. I guess they thought he was still suspended because he did not touch the ball, barely touched the ball in that particular game. Look for Detroit to get a heavy dose of number 28. Look for that. Dallas, Philadelphia, critical, and I mean critical early season divisional game, and I'm gonna tell you why. Dallas, of course, Dallas comes in 1-0. Philly's 0-1. Philadelphia loses that game, starts out 0-2. They will find themselves already two games behind the Dallas Cowboys after 2 weeks of play. If you're trying to make the playoffs, you're trying to win a division, and I have a feeling that only one team is coming out of the NFC East. I just have a feeling. I think that I like the strength of the Central. I think a couple teams have a chance to come out the West. I just have a feeling that I could be wrong, but I have a feeling that it's going to come down to the divisional winner in the NFC East. If you're Philadelphia Eagles, you don't want to go down two games to the Cowboys this early in the season. So that is to me a critical game for the Philadelphia Eagles. Of course, the game of the week should be early on, two weeks, the game of the year. Green Bay hosting Seattle, an absolute must-win game psychologically, not in terms of the standings or in terms of playoffs, in terms of making the playoffs or winning a division, but psychologically, Green Bay has to have this game. Seattle, the last two times that Seattle has beaten Green Bay, they have been just devastating in both games in Seattle. The Green Bay Seattle NFC Championship was one of the craziest games that I've ever seen in my life. It was one of the great collapses that I've ever seen, ever, because Green Bay so far outplayed Seattle, and that game wasn't even funny. If you're Green Bay, I think, you know, not only you beat Seattle, that you just stomp Seattle. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but Green Bay has to have this game. No Cam Chancellor for the second. Well, Cam Chancellor will not play. We saw what Foles was able to do to St. Louis, to that Seattle secondary. He lit them up. I expect a heavier dose of Marshawn Lynch in this game than I did week one. And expect Aaron Rodgers to go off in this particular game against that secondary. That secondary right now is reeling. The pass rush is still pretty good, not great. Though Bulaga will not play for Green Bay. Again, this should be a nasty game. These two teams don't like each other. I like Green Bay to win this game. I think it'll be very close. Packers at home have been undefeated last year and have been borderline unbeatable. I mean, they're putting up the numbers they put up at home are just their home numbers are just ridiculous. Last year they averaged 40 points a game at home. Led the NFL averaging 30, but averaged 40 a game at home. Expect to see a heavy dose of Eddie Lacy. I do think you can run up the middle on Seattle. It's crazy their defense is, their front seven, that, like, you can run north and south. Now, to the edges is one thing because they have so much speed, but I believe north-south you can run against them. Another game featuring a couple of 0-1 teams that's going to be – well, a 1-0 team and a 0-1 team, but a whole team that's 0-1 is the Giants and Falcons. Giants coming off that disaster against the Cowboys where they just, you know, Tom Coughlin, Eli Manning. I think Eli Manning really took the hit for Coughlin. I really do. There's no way to me that I see that Eli Manning, as savvy as he is as a quarterback and as smart as he is, would tell his running back not to score a touchdown that would put his team up by 10 points. Like, I just don't see him doing that. I think he was taking a hit for Coughlin, but regardless of that, the Giants need that game home opener against the Falcons. Julio Jones could be the best receiver in football. He was tremendous last week against the Eagles. Basically, almost single-handedly beat the Eagles. Giants have nobody, and I mean no one, that even matches up with Julio Jones. So you're going to see a heavy dose of Matt Ryan, Julio Jones. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. The Falcons' defense is terrible, too. They can't cover anybody as well. So I see a high-scoring game. No Victor Cruz this particular game. I expect Odell Beckham, who had a quiet game against the Cowboys, expect him to get off in this game early, get off early on, and we'll see what happens with that. So very interesting week of NFL football. Should be a great week. A great Sunday of football. Luke Kuechly will be out for the Panthers. He will not play. Of course, you know about Dez Bryant. You know about Deshaun Jackson. Brian Bulaga, I just mentioned, is out for Green Bay. T.Y. Hilton and Robert Mathis, who hasn't played since last year, will probably get to start tomorrow for Indianapolis. So that's good news if you're a Colts fan. Other major injuries, really no other major injuries to speak of. As far as the Thursday night game, I almost forgot to mention that. As far as the Thursday night game goes, Denver does what it always does, and that's beat Kansas City. But if you're a Denver Bronco fan, you just have to be nervous about Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning, again, I really didn't start thinking about his arm strength until like the end of last year, but it's actually gotten worse as far as his arm strength goes. Like, how to defend Denver, to me, is very easy. Very easy. If I'm a defensive coordinator against Denver, I'm daring, and I mean daring Peyton Manning to beat me deep. Please throw the ball past over my head. Please try to beat me deep. because he just does not have the arm strength anymore. He just doesn't have it. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Joe Quinn. We began the program talking about college football and just how unpredictable these first 3 weeks of the college football season have been. Whether it's Toledo winning games, whether it's Ohio State almost losing yesterday, whether it's, you know, the instability at quarterback. I mean, Florida State, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Alabama. All of these teams have major, and I mean major, quarterback questions. All of them. And these are teams that have national championship aspirations. Even Auburn, I can toss them into that mix. So we just don't know what direction that this college football season is going in. I don't have a feel of it right now. I think Mississippi is very good. I think Notre Dame has, you know, that with that win really opened up, really has a strong possibility that they can keep guys on the field to make the playoffs. The Pac-12, who knows? A lot of people thought it was all about USC, but that's not going to be the case. It looks like it's not going to be the case. I mean, it looks like USC could lose three or four games easily. Even TCU hasn't been impressive. Even in victories, haven't been impressive this year. So that to me, that early on in the college football season, we haven't reached October yet. No one has stood out. No one. Again, people are going to overreact to Alabama losing. Don't overreact to Alabama losing. Alabama has lost early games in September before and has bounced back to make the playoffs, even win championships. I don't think this is going to be one of those years because I think that I just don't think they're as talented as they have been the past couple of years. And also, their quarterback situation is a disaster. Nick Saban, I thought, overreacted by benching Coker after two wins, especially after one of those wins is over a nationally ranked team. Primetime neutral site, and a game with Coker, I thought played well. So I thought that was an overreaction. Coker ended up almost brought him back. Mississippi is loaded with talent. They are loaded with NFL prospects up and down the board. Up and down the board. I like the quarterback. He's not great, but I think he's very good. And Chad Kelly, the nephew of Jim Kelly. I like him. Their defense is fast. They're athletic. They have athletes at the skill positions, corner, wide receiver. They are loaded with talent. I can make a case. Like, they are probably on paper. They're probably better than Alabama on paper. So that game was not an upset. You want to call it an upset because they won at Alabama, sure. But as far as talent goes, that was not an upset by any stretch of imagination. But again, to me, the story of the college football season, from where I'm standing, is the instability at quarterback with these big time schools. That to me will define and determine a lot of what happens in 2015 with the college football. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of 1211 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn. I will see you next time. Have a great, great rest of the weekend. So long.